What's up, Pharmacy Nation? I'm Pharmacy Joe. Thank you for listening to the Elective Rotation, a Critical Care Pharmacy podcast. This is episode 376. In this episode, I'll discuss the updated Top 100 Drug Interactions reference book. I have all the evidence supporting today's show linked up in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode376. Most third-party drug interaction services or references don't help with determining the clinical significance of a given drug interaction, but the book Top 100 Drug Interactions by Hansen and Horn helps me determine whether an interaction is real versus theoretical, so I can guide patients and physicians safely through the complicated arena of drug interactions. This book is my all-time favorite reference book on drug interactions, and I've purchased it every year for well over a decade. I especially appreciate how the authors are willing to accurately state the risk of potential drug interactions and only include in the book interactions they feel are clinically significant. This makes Top 100 Drug Interactions a guide that can be counted on to provide practical advice for managing drug interactions without any unnecessary fluff. The book has 10 sections, but I find myself using 3 of them over and over again in my practice. The first of these sections is the cytochrome P450 interaction table. Not all drug interactions are known, and new drugs arrive on the market with limited drug interaction data. To allow clinicians to predict pharmacokinetic drug interactions in unstudied combinations, Hansen and Horn publish an extensive table of medications that affect and are affected by the cytochrome P450 system, as well as other transporters such as P-glycoprotein. You can see a sample of this table in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode376. The table allows clinicians to identify interactions between enzyme inhibitors, inducers, and substrates. In addition, if a medication has a primary pathway of elimination, that is identified in the chart. This extra piece of information can be used to hypothesize the degree to which an interaction may be significant. For example, although amitriptyline is metabolized by 1A2, 2C19, 2D6, 3A4, and PGP, the primary pathway of elimination is 2D6. Using this information, a clinician may choose to allow the use of a 3A4 inhibitor with amitriptyline with the knowledge that many other pathways for elimination exist. The second section I frequently use is the Top 100 Drug Interaction Monographs. These monographs provide practical information on how to address specific drug interactions, including suggested alternatives for either drug involved in the interaction, as well as actionable monitoring strategies. The classification system for drug interactions used in the book is as follows. Class 1, this would be a contraindication or there's no situation where the benefit outweighs the risk, such as using pseudoephedrine plus a monoamine oxidase inhibitor. Class 2 is avoid use unless there's no alternative or the interaction is desired, such as warfarin plus aspirin. Class 3 is an increased risk exists, but monitoring may be an acceptable course of action, such as low doses of fluconazole with 3A4 substrates. And this is because, as the authors point out, fluconazole is a weak 3A4 inhibitor at low doses. And then classes 4 and 5 are minimal and no risk. Although the guide contains far more than 100 potential drug interactions, the authors do a superb job focusing on only the clinically relevant interactions that are class 1, 2, or 3. The third section I frequently use is the one for evaluating QTC interactions. My method for evaluating QTC interactions draws strongly from Hansen and Horn's book, and I discuss it extensively in episode 12. So if you haven't already listened, go to pharmacyjoe.com/episode12 to hear the episode about QTC drug interactions. In brief, two things I keep in mind about QTC drug interactions are, one, be risk-averse whenever possible. Take, for example, a patient with no allergies on sotalol, prescribed levofloxacin for community-acquired pneumonia. As long as their renal function is good, this is a low-risk interaction that you could just monitor. But ceftriaxone plus doxycycline is just as good for CAB and completely avoids the risk of torsades. So why would I take the risk when I have another first-line treatment that doesn't include torsades risk? Things get murkier when you're having to decide between using a second-line drug or monitoring the interaction. Take the same patient, but give them anaphylaxis to penicillin. Would vancomycin plus aztreonam plus doxycycline provide the best cure for their pneumonia? How do I balance the added risk of toxicity that using vancomycin brings? Sticking with the levofloxacin and monitoring the patient in the hospital might be more reasonable here. And this brings me to my second point. And that is, EKGs are cheap and non-invasive. You should have no hesitation asking for one if the purpose is to evaluate or monitor a QTC drug interaction. The cost of the hospital is just the ink and paper. The machine and technician salary have been paid for already. This is a fixed cost that doesn't enter into the equation. If you're interested in getting your own copy of the book Top 100 Drug Interactions by Hansen and Horn, you can do so by following the link in the show notes at pharmacyjoe.com/episode376. Thank you so much for listening. I'll see you in the next episode of the Elective Rotation.